Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Toyota Brookhaven services all makes and models. That could be why we were voted best service department the past 2 years. Come see why. Exit 40 Brookhaven or online at toyotabrookhaven.com. Great service, great savings. At Toyota Brookhaven, we deliver.
I'm Steve Azar, and I'm on the other side of the microphone, meaning I'm asking the questions this time, and oh, have mercy for the airwaves. I spent 20 years in Music City, wrote and made some hits, traveled the world, and then moved my family back to the birthplace of American music and where the magnolia trees prosper. And now every time I put my feet on Mississippi soil, when I'm off the road, well, I'm at peace. On this show, it's all about hearing the story straight from the mouths of the friends I've made along the way, their journey to success. Heck, there might be someone on, I don't even know, but you know how us Mississippi types are. We tend to take well to new company. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them. I'm Steve Azar.
It's just like that muddy river, moving slow. Ain't no worries, it's how life goes, baby. In a Mississippi Minute. That's right.
Hey, folks, time for another In a Mississippi Minute. I am Steve Azar reminding you that my pals at Superior Catfish, homegrown right here in Mississippi. Come on. Go to SuperiorCatfish.com and visit Mississippi.org as the music and culture ambassador of this fabulous state, which I really appreciate more than you guys know me. It means the world. Check it out. Take a tour on the Freedom Trail marker system. It'll blow your mind. Today's guest is an Americana singer-songwriter coming from, in the troubadour Americana fashion, as a native of New Jersey, but has spent time in California and Texas, hopped around, but now putting in some time and maybe laying down some roots where I used to live in Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. His style, deep in Americana, like we said, and classic country, got his own thing going, which is very important in the world of music. He's got a great soulful voice. I love his voice and his picking style. Well, it's been known to blend incredible household names like Townes Van Zandt and Justin Townes Earl. His debut album titled Asbury Park, Let's Talk Springsteen, pays tribute to his New Jersey upbringing, and it also points to new song ways and highways in his near future. So I'm interested in talking about that. So let's get to it right now and what all of this means with Dean Harlem. What's up, Dean?
Hey, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Is Harlem the real name?
Yes.
It's a cool name.
Yes, it is.
I like it. Let's talk about this resident gig you've got with Eric Church at his mega bar. What is it? Chiefs on Broadway?
Yep. Chiefs. Yep. That's right.
So tell me about it and how'd you get it?
Well, how I got it, I think I was just in the right place at the right time. My buddy, Jake Newman, who I play guitar for in his alt country band, he got the gig first and then he referred me to the booker, and the booker listened to my tunes and said he loved it, and got me on there for two nights a week, Sundays and Wednesday nights. Yeah, the gig's been great so far. Eric Church is doing a really wonderful thing, and on Broadway, he really made a great spot, a great hangout for country music lovers. And it's got three stages: a band stage, a singer-songwriter stage, and a whole entire venue. And I'm playing on the singer-songwriter stage on the second floor, and it's all geared towards just songs and songwriting and sharing stories. It's I don't really spend a lot of time on Broadway. Honestly, if I ever go to Broadway, it's only to see a friend play at Robert's Western World, or maybe Acme or Third and Lindsley. But as far as I know, I haven't seen anything like what they're doing at Chiefs on Broadway, just having original songs and intimate performances.
So you think about all the people that are coming in from all over too. So you're not just playing for a small, any small town in America. Nashville's not small anymore. It's got cranes now as the state bird. I've seen it. It was not like that when I was there. You know, the Bell South Tower, we called it the Bat Building because it was really the only really large building in town. And now it seems like it's getting dwarfed. Phil Vassar, when we were coming up at the same time, and Phil had his own bar, and he played at his own bar. And that was his house gig. And that's the closest thing to what I'm seeing now. You know, and after that, Toby, you know, God rest Toby's soul. And there were some places, you know, Blake, people have been popping up with bars. I'm sure they got business partners that are running them and all that, and their name is there and all that. But you think about Eric and all these guys are doing, they are given opportunity. It sounds like Eric to me, because the songwriter that he is, I think that he cares so much about that side of it that it's given folks like you an opportunity to go ahead and be on stage. When I came to town, I was playing 200 one-nighters a year, and nobody knew that in Nashville. I was really going the other way from the Mississippi Delta, spreading out, but never really went toward Vanderbilt when I was the college days and all that, more LSU, Arkansas, Ole Miss and State, et cetera, Southern and all that. But with you being there and doing that, so let's back up a second. You come to town and you're a player. Like, you can play. So were you always playing live before you came to town?
Yes. Before I moved to Nashville in 2020, I was playing live for quite a while. But the first time I really stepped foot in Nashville was when I was 18. I couldn't play, and that's a whole nother story. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You had to be an age thing. You could probably only get in so many places, right?
You know, surprisingly, I remember walking down Broadway into various bars in the morning and serving me beer.
Isn't that interesting? I like that. Well, you sure you weren't in Louisiana? That's right. All right. So, but I think my point is this. When I came to Nashville, I ended up on a writing couch, and it was like being on a shrink's couch, because I was getting the publishing deals. They wanted us to be in there writing, you know, down on Music Row, when Music Row mm-hmm. looked like it did, a lot of smaller houses and stuff. And we'd go there every day. And then I had to leave playing behind. And so there were years that went by when I was just writing. And then it was almost like it was a part of me, Dean, that I just almost forgot about. But everything was to get back on the road with some records that the masses would want to hear, right? You want to mm-hmm. grow your audience. And so finally, when I got back out there, I said, oh, my God, this is why I do it. I mean, I love writing more than anything. But if you don't get to play it for the people, you sort of like you feel like you're just not doing. It's just not completing the cycle. You know, it's like getting on base and never scoring a run, you know, so sort of dealing with that. All right. Let's talk about your wonder years, although you're not far from your wonder years. How old are you now?
I'm 32 now.
32. OK. All right. You're still very young. I didn't have my first hits until I was 37. Wow. So it was a crazy journey for me, but there was always things along the way that were either financially or something that was giving me some sort of hope along the way. So when it finally popped, it popped. But for you growing up, you grow up in New Jersey. How long?
That's right. Pretty much up until I was 18.
Yeah. Okay. So you spent the nurturing years in the heart of it all. Asbury right. Park, obviously something special to you as well as Springsteen?
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm a huge Springsteen fan. And Asbury Park is a cultural center and a place for songwriters. And it's just a place I would always go to as a kid, even before music was my main thing. It was just a place I went to clear my mind and things like that.
I love hearing that. You know, for me in Mississippi, that was always my Asbury Park, the Mississippi River, grew up on it. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd go out there and I just, every time there was like just this incredible river of possibilities of your imagination just exploding, you know, and being on the farmland and all that down here. It couldn't have happened for me anywhere else. I would be doing something else if I didn't grow up here. For you, do you feel like it was imperative to grow up those 18 years where you did for what you're doing now?
I wouldn't say imperative, but it's definitely had a large, well, I mean, it's who I am. It's where I grew up. I can't do anything about it. You know,
You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's just influenced my music, whether I like it or not. That's kind of what Asbury Park, the song is about. It's kind of like your song Greenville, you know, talking about your hometown and just this nostalgic feeling for your hometown.
Yeah, I love that. Folks, you got to check out Dean Harlem's Asbury Park, by the way. And I love hearing you say that. I appreciate that. You know, the funny thing is I wrote that when I first went to Nashville in 91. And so it never went on a record until really later in the sequence of records. And it's interesting. I'd already moved back after 20 years. So it was 24 or 5 years later when I finally put it out for real as a whole record, not as a hidden track. Mm-hmm. And it was like, almost like I've written myself home. It's crazy. And I think as you start to write and do some of the things that you're doing in your life, you never know where these songs, almost like the premonitions for the future. And I'm not trying to get weird, but for me, I have literally been writing myself home. So I'm always careful. I don't want to write anything that's going to write me to the wrong place. You know? We should write that together. All right. So let's take a quick break. Dean Harlem is my guest. You got to check his music out. Fantastic artist. And he's very different in a great way, because I think there at some point there needs to be a moment of honesty when you become yourself. And I really think he is finding himself like few get to do. So we'll be right back. Before we go, Superior Catfish. I'm sure Dean would like to have some, but he's in Nashville. But I'm sure my pals at Superior Catfish sells catfish to Nashville and all over the world from Mississippi. Check it out, SuperiorCatfish.com, and visit Mississippi.org. Man, the trail system, the Civil Rights Museum, so many wonderful things that celebrates our cool grounds we call Mississippi. I'm Steve Azar. Don't go away.
Greatness.
Steve Azar here with Dean Harlem. I want everybody, when we get off the phone, well, Dean and I are on the phone. Well, we're on Zoom now. It's got so confusing now. But when we get off and you guys are done listening, I want you to go check him out and follow him. If you listen on Spotify, if you listen on Pandora, Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, I can keep going. Napster, forget Napster, because they killed me when I was in my wonder years of making records. They beat the stew out of me, so not so much on them. But before we get there, and I'm going to quit being negative, SuperiorCatfish.com is positive. My friends in Macon, Mississippi, produce right here. Why would you get it from anywhere else in the world? And visit Mississippi.org. As I say, never an afterthought. Plan your weekend with your family. If you don't have a family, you'll maybe meet somebody that changes your world. Visit Mississippi.org. All right. Speaking of changing worlds, we got a Jersey boy from the Jersey Shores, and he is here with me, Dean Harlem. Dean, all right, let's talk about your move to Nashville. You obviously had Texas, and where else did you live?
I lived in San Francisco for 3 years, Texas for almost a year, and New Hampshire for 6 years, and grew up in Jersey. Now I'm in Tennessee.
All music related stuff. You were going, you were chasing in the scene, the music scenes there.
Yep.
Was it Austin?
Fort Worth, actually.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So tell me, so take me, first of all, let's back way the heck up. Sports. I always feel like sports kind of helped me, or helped a lot of our friends sort of survive getting the stew beat out of us in the music business for a while. It kept us hopeful. Whatever it was that you grew up doing until music sort of took its, you know, complete hold on you. Tell me about growing up for you.
Well, my parents are Ukrainian immigrants. They moved here in 1995, and I grew up in a Russian speaking household. So I still speak Russian. And, you know, for immigrants moving to the United States from a, you know, economically wrecked, destroyed place, you know, they wanted their kid to you know, go somewhere and have the best, and you know, that's what they really wanted. And so when I started drifting towards art and music, they didn't really want me to go in that direction, because you know, artists are notorious for not making any money, so they really didn't really support me when I wanted to do music. And after getting out of high school, I already kind of had this idea that I was going to leave home. And shortly after graduating, packed up my guitar, a bag, and just started walking and ended up in California. And
looking back now that you know what California looked like to you and, mm-hmm. and what it did for you progressing your career, yeah. or slowing down, whatever you felt like, it was still a move you made. Was it a good one?
Yeah. There's a lot of different places I could have gone to with different music scenes, but I'm glad I ended up in San Francisco where I did, because at that point, it didn't really matter where I went, but I landed in San Francisco, and I found a way to make a living doing music almost instantly, which is by playing on the street. I just was like, wow, I could make money by practicing all day, basically. And I did that for 3 years, and it was great. I was paying my rent and building up my chops as a musician. And after a while, I just realized, felt like I wasn't going anywhere as a musician, just playing on the street. So I made the move back east after that.
Man, I respect that so much. And I've had some great acts that I've interviewed that literally started playing on the streets. You know, we grew up close enough to New Orleans. That was our football team, 4.5 mm-hmm. hours from where I'm at now after moving back from Nashville. So, you know, we spend a couple times a year in New Orleans, at least, and that scene of seeing people on the streets, if you just stop for a second, some of the musicians, it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, and it's gotten better over the years. It's gotten different too, because, you know, kids are different. You know, they're growing up and they're listening to different music, and sometimes not all about jazz and Louis Armstrong. It's, you know what I mean? It's a different thing. And you get stopped and you get mesmerized. So you go do that. All right. How long are you in San Fran?
3.5 years.
You meet your bride there? You meet your bride where?
I did meet my bride there.
So there you go.
She was, another crazy story. So I'll just give it to you briefly. She was on a trip from New Hampshire, where she's from, had just broken up with a banjo player. She was just on this solo cross country trip, kind of figuring things out. And I was playing on the street and in Union Square, downtown San Francisco. And she threw me a dollar, and I didn't notice her because, you know, I've got people stopping by throwing me dollars all day.
Yeah.
That was a Sunday. And then the next day, it was a Monday, I went to an open mic at the Riptide Tavern in the Sunset District. And I sat down at the bar, signed up for the open mic, sat down at the bar, and the lady next to me says, "Hey, I gave you a dollar yesterday." I'm like, "Oh, thanks." And started talking, and that's how.
Come on, that doesn't happen like that. Did you say you're pretty cheap? Wasn't I better than that? Did you say that?
No. I was actually in the process of trying to get back together with my ex, and you know, she tried to help me achieve that goal.
She was helping you.
She was helping me. I mean, she wasn't expecting to see me more than, you know, that night, and no ulterior motive. No, she's just like, "Hey, you know, if you want my advice on this thing, you know, blah blah blah," and I just talked it out. And I didn't end up getting together with my ex again. And there you go. She stayed in San Francisco for a little while, and we started dating. And then fast forward 10 years, and here we are.
Here we are. Okay, so you guys get married pretty quick?
No, 9 years later.
You're lucky you're alive right now. That's all I got to say. All right, wait. Let's jump. That's y'all's way of doing that. Our kids are the same way. My kids are... they're younger than you, but not, you know, my oldest is 28 and everything. And they're just content on making sure it's right. You know, when we grew up, here comes Dad talking to you right now. When we grew up in our time, it was sort of like a prerequisite. You go, you get married younger, you know, and that's kind of gradually, that age, I think, has gradually climbed a little bit since the time with my parents. But it just sort of was like sort of on the checklist. And I think a lot of people probably shouldn't have checked that list off. You know, I think it's a crapshoot when you're really young. I mean, mm-hmm. my wife and everybody goes, "Y'all got lucky." Well, I used to be offended by that. I go, "You know what? I earned my wife after," and it's 35 years later. But now, 35 years later, I know it was mm-hmm. lucky. I do know it was lucky that we were able to find the right person to go through all of the mess and the chaos and the beauty. You know what I mean? You got to, It's an interesting thing. All right. So you guys go to New Hampshire after that because she's from there. Do you spend some time?
Yep. She's from there. Stayed there for 6 years. We lived in a cabin in the woods with no running water or electricity.
Oh, my gosh. You've gone from the streets of San Francisco to a place with no water. What do you got? A septic tank? Nothing?
No, we had just an outhouse with a bucket.
This is freaking awesome. This is the American. So you're going to get to say you live the American dream.
You really are.
Right. Well, it's a nightmare along the way, just FYI. Trust me. You know, you can't get the dream part unless you go through all the hell. You know, it's just part of it. And that's what's going to make you, and it's what's making you, because you're on this journey of songwriting and discovering yourself along the way, and you're tapped into that. But you've already lived so much real life. You saw your parents go with what they went through. You saw them want a better life for you. You tap into all of those real emotions and real things that have happened in your life. And when all that comes out, everybody can relate to it. Mm-hmm. Everybody that you want in your crowd, I can tell you that. I mean, I think that that's just fantastic. Let's take a quick break because I want to talk. I want to continue the journey and I want to get you. You go to Texas next, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick break. Folks, Dean Harlem, Asbury Park, one of his albums titled that. Your next album, do we know what it's going to be titled?
It's going to be called Red Oak Hill. It's the street I lived on in New Hampshire.
Well, there you go. So, see, you've already totally in tap with your life. We shouldn't even be doing this show. I'm supposed to be giving you advice. As I say, I'm old enough to be your dad, but I'm not your dad.
So he is younger than my dad, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's good news. I'm younger than somebody. We're going to be right back. Go to SuperiorCatfish.com. There's catfish and there's Superior Catfish. Do the math and visit Mississippi.org. So grateful to be on the Country Music Trail Marker. The trails all over. They extend quite a bit out of Mississippi, and I'm blessed to be mile marker 32 in front of Jim's Cafe here in Greenville, Mississippi. I'm eternally grateful. We'll be right back. I'm Steve Azar. $1,000 available for first-time homebuyers. Hey folks, Steve Azar here. Helping is the heart of our friends at Guarantee Bank. They offer programs like the Homebuyer Equity Leverage Partnership Grant that can assist qualified first-time homebuyers with up to $20,000 towards down payment and provide home ownership counseling to empower you on your journey. These funds are first come, first serve. Learn more about this program and to apply now, go to gbtonline.com. Guarantee Bank, member FDIC.
From the sea. In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Starting to loosen up a little bit. I've been into New York to see my baby girl as she does her culinary thing, and she's been doing her externship after culinary school, Dean. So we wanted to go to the restaurant, and they treated us really good. She had her chef's outfit on, and we were proud of her, so I went and kissed on her and then went and did the Hootie and the Blowfishes Monday after the Masters. Got to jam with the boys, Darius and Mark and Dean and Sony, like we always get to do at their charity event in Myrtle Beach. I just got back, and when I start my interviews again after a week, I stumble. It's hard to get back into this mode. So I appreciate you letting me be the one for you to shake the ice off of me. Speaking of ice, when they pack it and they catch it, they seine it, they catch it. What do they do? SuperiorCatfish.com. Go check them out. Good folks over there in Macon, Mississippi. It's Mississippi made. And visit Mississippi.org. So many wonderful things await. Let's go play some golf at Dancing Rabbit Golf Club up at Pearl River Resort. It is fabulous, the Augusta that you get to play. All right, Dean Harlem is my guest today. I promise you guys I'm going to stop talking to him unless you promise me you're going to go check his music out. And let's make an impact here in Mississippi and all over the folks all over the country that listen to the show. It'd mean the world to Dean. All right, Dean, let's get to Texas. You and your wife are in New Hampshire. When you're in New Hampshire, what are you doing?
I'm gigging anywhere I can, just taking whatever gigs come my way, anywhere I could find, bar, restaurant, venue, anything, farmer's market, anything, anywhere I could play. I'm just looking for gigs. I'm also working for a carpenter buddy of mine who's also a musician, and he kind of throws me some work to help make ends meet. So I'm doing carpentry, construction, and playing gigs. And that's pretty much how I spend my time in New Hampshire. I do a few tours out to Texas and get this idea that I want to move to Texas. After moving to New Hampshire, I work and I save up and I buy an old van, a Ford Econoline, and kind of put a bed in it, kind of fix it up so we could live in it. And my wife, still a girlfriend at the time, we go to Texas and we stay there for 6 months. End up spending 4 months in a Walmart parking lot in Dallas in the van. Like she's working her online job at a cafe in the daytime. I'm working at a bar, bussing tables in the evenings, and then come back to the van and we drive to the Walmart and spend the night there. And then,
and they never had a problem with that 24-hour Walmart.
No, this one, they never had a problem at, though on that trip at one point, I think it was in Houston, it was New Year's Eve and we were looking for a place to stay, you know, sounds familiar, right? It was New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve. I mean, we're looking for a place to stay and we go to this Walmart and, the security guard comes by and kicks us out.
Come on.
That's the only time.
Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve? Which one?
It was Christmas Eve.
Are you kidding me? On Christmas Eve? Well, what a nice guy.
Christmas Eve. Yeah.
Hope he got more than coal in his stocking. I can tell you that. You sort of look like a tough guy. I'm going to say this. You do look like a guy that if they were to De Niro in Raging Bull, if they were to cast a new guy to play De Niro, it'd be you. So tell me, you box a little bit growing up?
No, I played hockey as a kid, and that's about it for high school.
But hockey's a big, where your family grew up. I mean, obviously, it's huge.
It is. After I got a little older after high school, in my 20s, I started exercising a little more and went through a little phase where, like a six-month phase where I was doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And
so there you go. See if I don't know my... I just can look at you and tell. Have you kept doing that? Kept it up somewhat? Practicing maybe some?
No, I quit doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu because I was getting just obsessed with it. I'm such a monomaniac. Like when I find a thing, like I just like go all in. And I was doing that with jiu-jitsu and starting to like hurt my shoulder, hurt my back, my fingers. And then like all my buddies who were doing it, they had their fingers wrapped up in tape and like all their fingers.
You need your fingers. You need your fingers.
And I'm like, I can't do that. I can't play guitar with like two of my fingers taped up.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe I could, and it would be like a Django Reinhardt situation, but, so I stopped doing jiu-jitsu though it was a great experience.
Smart.
Really fun.
Yeah, and I think that helps your competitive edge too, because your competence, obviously, doing something like that. I feel like, especially that sport, and that it's very disciplined, right? Wouldn't you say some of the more disciplined sports? I think that helps you in the long term of how you've. But man, you've had a journey. I mean, this is a serious journey you've been on. Do you feel like that? Are you satisfied to where you are right now? Because musically, I see Americana. And when I see Americana, I see rock. You know, I see folk rock. I see even more so than country. I just think that you're sort of. Okay, so for me, I was able to have a unique country mainstream success. But the truth of it is I was a mutt, meaning I wanted to push the boundaries. And I wasn't thinking about boundaries, but I wanted to write about my home. So for me, this is just, it was the right move of leaving and coming home and really encapsulating myself in the past and present and letting it all come to. And that's where all of, to me, I really found myself. There's certain songs along the way I found myself in. So for you, which songs have you felt like, okay, my song was Waiting on Joe. I didn't even think it was a song, but it was the most important song of my life to write. And it turned out to be the one that got me the big deal and the one that did everything. And I would have said it would have been the last one until looking back. It would have been the only one. So for you, which songs have had to been written for you to be right now where you are?
I would say my biggest song at the moment is definitely Rock Bottom. And, you know, just like the title suggests, that it was written at a rock bottom moment. And I think everyone has moments like that in their lives. I'm sure you can recall something in your life where you've had a moment where you were feeling so low that you see life as a turning point. You know, sure. Everything before happened before that moment, and everything after happened after that moment. That song just came out really quickly, almost in one sitting, pretty much. And I feel like I have a lot more songs to write, and I think right now that's probably my strongest song at the moment.
Is that coming on the new record? Because I listened to the whole record, but for some reason, you know, we were listening and traveling, and there was people in the airport, and I was had my headphones on. And is that on? That's on the new record coming out, or is that last?
It's record? On the last one. It's on the
Asbury Park. Park. Okay, I'm gonna go back and triple listen to it after we get off. I apologize. I wanted to make sure that I listened to Asbury Park and some of the other things. So I locked in then, and then distractions started happening all around me and racing to the gate and all that stuff. All right, Dean Harlem is my guest right now. We are rolling into. Let's see how long we got. We got about a minute left in this segment. Okay, so you go from the parking lots in Dallas, which I don't like, by the way, and you're doing your thing. You come to Nashville. When and why?
So after Texas, you know, turns out kind of a little harder to settle there in a van than we thought. So we go back to New Hampshire, and then just after a while, we feel the need to get out of New Hampshire. My wife, still girlfriend at the time, we break up. We go through a breakup, and we kind of separately move to Nashville. Even though we're broken up, we're still very close and talking to each other all the time. But she moves to Nashville, and then I moved to Nashville shortly after. We didn't really coordinate it that way. She's also a musician and wanted to be close to
the country
music scene, and I felt like the natural progression of my career and life in music was going from a place like New Hampshire and then just going to Music City Mecca.
Right.
That's how that came about.
And then you guys got back together?
Yeah, we did. We got back together shortly after that.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have to go any more detail than that. I can tell you, I went to Nashville when I was 14 and made my first records. And then I went, and I wanted it back then, but it wasn't going to happen. And then I was always shopping in Los Angeles and New York. I never shopped Nashville after that. And so, I mean, my band was geared in just what I was doing, and we were a little even over the top. We weren't ready. You know, we didn't know who we were. And, you know, when you played the songs that you wrote with the guys that were there, your songs became something else because of the guys you were with. So I couldn't really ever find that perfect magic dust for me and magic, the right people in the room. But now I've got a guy that's been with me 28 years, 24 years, 20 years. One of the guys retired. I mean, we really found ourselves together making music, and it was a blessing. The journey of our crazy career. I'm with Dean Harlem. Please check his music out, please. And speaking of anything musical on your plate, Superior Catfish. Go to superiorcatfish.com. There's catfish. There's Superior Catfish. Visit Mississippi.org. So many rock star things. And I'm saying that Billy Idol, whether you like it or not, if you've seen the commercial, folks, there are rock stars. This is the birthplace of America's music. We'll be right back. I'm Steve Azar. All the way.
$20,000 available for first-time homebuyers. Hey folks, Steve Azar here. Helping is the heart of our friends at Guarantee Bank. They offer programs like the Homebuyer Equity Leverage Partnership Grant that can assist qualified first-time homebuyers with up to $20,000 towards down payment and provide home ownership counseling to empower you on your journey. These funds are first come, first serve. Learn more about this program and to apply now, go to gbtonline.com. Guarantee Bank, member FDIC.
family termite.
Flying down that levee road, trying to see how fast you go. I got my baby along for the ride. There's forever far as I can see. At least that's what I want to believe, girl. As the sun sets in your eyes. Well, some things never change.
I know my guest today, Dean Harmon, is ready to go write a song instead of be on my radio show, but it's been really fantastic getting to know you, Dean. Before SuperiorCatfish.com, I would love to bring you some, and we could partake in a little nice fried catfish made here in Mississippi. And visit Mississippi.org, just a great way to celebrate and appreciate your home state and all the musical history, culinary history, poets, writers, authors, you know, potters. All right here. And shout out to our farmers out there. I'm a farmer friends out there. All the hard work you do. All right. Dean Harlem is my guest today. You can follow him on everywhere you partake in music. And I want you to really give him a listen for me, please. Great, great young man. Okay, Dean, first of all, who are you making records on now? Who's your label?
No label. Unsigned.
Well, that's not how you say it. You're independent artist, because I mean, I was on Universal and I stepped down and went and did my own thing, and it's been a better career for me. So you're doing your own thing.
I'm doing my own thing right now. I'd be happy to find a label and find some kind of management. I don't know. Let's see what's out there.
This resident gig could turn into more, you think? Or I see that you have like 19 or 20 shows, something like that. Yeah.
The residency goes on indefinitely.
Okay, so let me see what I'm reading here. I see what you're saying. Okay, so you get to just do this gig for quite a while now.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about it. I think they're experimenting with this idea of having like a singer-songwriter stage in on Broadway. So I think they're also kind of trying to see how things go. And so you don't know, they might keep going with it. They might say we're going to just stick to the pop cover thing. I don't know.
Yeah, but, no. Look, man, this makes total sense, especially with the artist that Eric is. So you're getting to do your own thing, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Well, look, man, this is. You can imagine if you have to sit there and do cover tunes on Broadway all night. I mean, it'd drive you crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's not who you are. It's not why you busked or whatever you call it on the streets of San Francisco. It's not why you lived in that van of yours in Walmart parking lot. It's not the journey that, you know, it's not the reason you and your wife had a little bit of a hiccup and now you're back together. And met in Nashville. All of this is your journey, and it's the way. It's just our plans are not our plans. And I just feel like that this is a perfect place for you. And I know somebody like Eric, and I know it's about making sure people are there and all that. But man, if they give you a year there, you watch what happens to your career. 2 years there, you watch, because all you're going to be doing is building this fan base. You know, yeah. So the longer you have there, and then watch this thing work, and then you've got another whole level of a bluebird, you know, that has never been done before. So, I mean, a lot of people this is great. And look, you see who's coming to Music City. So having a resident gig in Music City is really special, because you're getting to play for new people every night.
Yeah.
I mean, are you feeling the impact? Are you seeing it? Are you, when you get to meet the folks afterwards, are you that kind of artist? Are you, you are that kind of artist. I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to talk to everyone after the show. I am playing for 3 hours straight, nonstop.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
3.5 hours. So a lot of people that they'll come and go, you know, I mean, it's hard enough to sit down, you know, for a 3 hour show as it is.
Yeah.
But after the show is over, I'll go and talk to people. And so far, the response has been great. You know, there's all people from all over the world, from all over the country coming and looking for, I think they're looking for an authentic, genuine experience, right? Something to a memory to make and bring back home. And that's what I'm trying to do, kind of just to provide, you know, just be myself on stage and connect with people.
Well, that's what you're doing, because you're going to be part of that memory, especially if they become big fans, you know. And I just want you to know, you have to keep in touch with me, because you have to go, oh, it happened that way.
Yeah.
Because I love what you're doing right now. I am telling you, this is, if we'd have had this back in our day in Music City, it would have progressed our careers. We would have been way ahead of the time. And like I said, Phil Vassar was getting to do it on his own terms in his own bar, and that helped him move the ball quicker. And we all just stopped playing, the ones that came from playing all over the place and then just left it just to write for ourselves. But it still put us on the bench as far as performing. So anyway, I'm not on the bench anymore, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that you and me had this time, and Brother Rob Evanoff, publicist, my man in L.A., hooked us up, and bless you and your bride and your career, my man.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Dean Harlem, folks. Dean Harlem, Superior Catfish. Go to superiorcatfish.com, homegrown in Mississippi, and so many beautiful things to do. You'd be proud of your Mississippi. Go to visit Mississippi.org. I'm Steve Azar. You've been with Dean Harlem later on.
I'm Steve Azar. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them, where you can take your sweet time.
You can now watch Super Talk Mississippi on your YouTube, Roku, and on Amazon Fire devices. Plus, you can now watch Super Talk TV live on CSpire TV Channel 70. Just go to supertalk.fm/connect to find out more. A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.